Hello and welcome to the Manga Log Podcast. This is a weekly 15 to 30 minute spoiler-free manga podcast where I introduce a new series each week and give you just a little bit of information to pique your interest and hopefully get you to discover your new favorite series. I try to focus on series that are only legally available in English and can be accessed both digitally and physically in case you have a specific preference. My name is John and I am the sole host of this podcast, but I do welcome community participation in any form. Typically around this time, I would do some community shout outs, but actually I do have like the same amount of Twitter followers as last week, but I do have some community participation this week, which is awesome. They're focused on the series that I'm covering this episode, so I'm actually going to save that for the later portion of the episode. This is the time I would give like just a respond to general community stuff that's not necessarily related to the podcast I'm covering for the episode. So I'm going to go ahead and skip past this section, but stay tuned because I will be covering some community participation. This week's episode, it's episode 23, and it's on the series Blam, written and illustrated by Nihei Tsutomu. It's pronounced Blam, but it's spelled Blame, and it has an exclamation point at the end. That's like a stylistic thing, I guess. Nihei, he has like kind of a cult following. He's known for his cyberpunk stories, which Blam is considered. And Blam and Knights of Sidonia are probably his most popular series. I think it has something to do with the Netflix adaptations, maybe. But before that, I think they probably already had a cult following. Blam is his first work. Knights of Sidonia is a little later, but that got a Netflix series adaptation. Blam got a movie adaptation. both of them are in CG. And I think they're done by the same animation studio. But I think all of his works are available in English, with the exception of, like, and this is the usual case with most mangaka, we don't really get their one-shots in English. One-shots are just, like, these one-off chapters, one-off stories, kind of. Unless they get, like, compiled, we really don't get them. But, like, his main series, like, I think he's got, like, five or six. They've all been a license and are legally available in English. I think his latest work is published by Kodansha, and it's actually a simulpubbing series. It's a, I don't know how to pronounce this, Aposims or Aposims. That's currently running in whatever magazine it runs in, I'm not sure. But it's simulpublished. You can read the latest chapters on like Comixology or Crunchyroll. But yeah, Blam was originally published by Tokyopop in English. They released it as the how it was released in Japan, which was in 10 volumes. I think that was back in like 2007-ish. And then after that, it went out of print. It was really hard to find. And Tokyopop, I don't know what the heck's going on with them. But basically, Blam ended up being re-released into six omnibuses or omnibuy by Vertical. And that was starting in 2016. They released them all within a year. And yeah, so the whole series is available legally in English in six omnibuy. And I own three. I caught this on a, I think, what is it? Kodansha, not Kodansha. Bookwalker called it like a flashback sale or something like that. So I got the first three volumes. First three omnibuy, which is like half the series, basically. Oh, excuse the background noise. Sounds like a freaking helicopter out there. A little war zone. oh, that distracted me. Oh, okay. So Blam, it ran in a magazine called Afternoon. This is a seinen magazine, so the demographic skews older men. And it ran from 1996 to 2003. Again, the series is complete. And I did mention the Afternoon magazine before in my Mushishi episode, because that also runs in Afternoon, or also ran in Afternoon. And ironically enough, I think it was also 10 volumes, so that was pretty cool. Blam is considered an action, drama, horror, sci-fi, and psychological. That's how myanimelist.net lists it in its genres. Wikipedia calls it a sci-fi, action, cyberpunk, post-apocalyptic. I think literally all of those are good descriptors. I'm glad that Mao includes the horror tag, because I was thinking about this really does feel like a horror manga. Because like just some of the monsters that Nihei comes up with this are absolutely disturbing. So it's nice to have that tag just in case you're not prepared. It's about this guy named, and I'm probably going to butcher this pronunciation. It's spelled K-Y-R-I-I. And I've seen some summaries and stuff that call him Killy. And if the Japanese pronunciation is anything to go by, it would be Kiri. And I think that's how you're supposed to pronounce it in this re-release. His name is, or it's either that or like Kairi, but or Cree. But I think it's Kiri. That lines up with the how other websites list his name. So his name's Kiri. He's kind of like this quiet, serious looking dude dressed in all black. Looks like he walked out of the Matrix or something. It seems like he's ascending this giant, like, tower-like structure, or like series of tower-like structures. Well, I think he's going up, but sometimes I feel like he's going down. So I'm not sure what direction he's going in. It's a little confusing, but basically he's going through, level by level, this structure, and he keeps when he does talk, he mentions like a mutation. He's collecting these genetic records, specifically the NET terminal gene. It's mentioned specifically quite often, either by him or other characters in the story. He's looking for that. I guess certain humans possess this gene, but he isn't one of those humans. I think it's like a rare gene. I'm not sure what purpose, what he wants it for, or what exactly the gene does. I think at one point he does describe it, and he's like, "Have you encountered a human?" He was talking to some other person. He's like, "Have you encountered anyone that can see, basically like an LCD in front of their eyes that contains like numbers or some sort of information?" That's how he described it. I think I could be wrong. I can't remember, but it's like some interface that appears before their eyes. They have this gene that allows them to see some like codes or information that other people can't see. So he's going along looking for this gene. And along the way, he encounters like a ton of like different situations that usually ends in explosions or him going flying somewhere. So like it's a lot of like hostile people. Like this world does not feel safe. It's very hostile. You get this whole sense of, like, any person he encounters is either gonna kill him or he's gonna kill them because he sees them as hostile. You don't really see a lot of other humans, and I say that like a question mark because there are people that look human, but they've been like augmented in some fashion. Lots of like cyborg looking people. And then you get like stuff that are like aliens, like straight out of a sci-fi horror film. Like I can't even like begin to describe them, but it looks like this dude's like walking. I don't know if you guys have ever seen the video game Dead Space, but I really got like Dead Space vibes. I feel like this. I played it briefly, because I'm a big baby. But that's what it reminded me of. And I'm like, this. It looks like he's just walking because he's alone a lot of the time. And when he's with somebody, they inevitably face a terrible fate. Most of the time he's just alone, and he's encountering all these crazy looking things that are just disgusting and disturbing, but like really awesome. Like just their design. But yeah, there's a lot to talk about here. That's the basic premise. He's ascending or descending this tower or series of towers. I'm not exactly sure how the structure works because it just seems so massive. And he's looking for this gene. What he needs the gene for, I'm not sure at the point in the story that I'm in. So there's a lot to talk about when it comes to just like the world. That's the basic premise I gave you guys, but there's like the world and just the characters within that world. So, the environments themselves, and this is why I have a hard time describing exactly where he is situated in this map that I've laid out in my head. But the environments are really, really big. Like sometimes they're large, and just like empty, but then other times, like he'll be in areas that are like cramped and like and busy. It's like the complete opposite. But most of it looks like run down, or some of it's just like looks abandoned or destroyed. He goes down lots of like long corridors or like pillars that just seem to go on forever. And I just really can't get a grasp on it, like structurally, because I'm not exactly sure where this place, this world is situated. The main character, Kitty, he even says at one point when he's having a conversation with another character that he's not even sure what land is. Like he asks, he's like, "What is land?" I think he was like quoting a book or reading a book, and he's like, "What is land?" So like, I don't know if this takes place on Earth or in space or underground. But yeah, it's a really strange, strange world. It's got this very, it's like a dyst it has this dystopia feel, a very bleak atmosphere. Everything feels hostile. At one point, I think you see on like a screen somewheres people running on a beach, And I don't know if they were watching a movie or what. It felt really out of place compared to everything else. But there was one point where he goes into like this colony and there's a giant LCD screen. It just shows two people running on a beach. And that's the only hint that you get that, okay, if this doesn't exist on Earth, then some place like Earth exists, or at least did exist at some point. So I'm not exactly sure what's going on here. But yeah, you just like, he's ascending, you know, he's going through these levels. Everything is hostile. You get lots of just death, like lots of people dying or killing each other or attempting to kill him. And it just feels very desolate and dangerous. And I like it. I like stories like this. It gives me a really like post-apocalyptic vibe. I love post-apocalyptic stories. I'm a huge fan of stuff like Attack on Titan. Even like The Promised Neverland, which I covered on this podcast. It was giving me that kind of vibe, and I love that. The art itself, I noticed, so I did mention these massive structures and not too much about the characters, because I think Nihei likes to put emphasis on his backgrounds. A lot of times he likes to zoom out from the characters, and he has like this overhead, just like kind of like a wide shot perspective, and you could just see the scale of the environments. So it's like less focused on people, more on the background. The world is more of a character than the characters themselves. So that's like opposite of a lot of manga, because sometimes you'll get like in manga some two-page spreads with the characters and maybe like a really beautiful background or something. But a lot of the time the background plays second fiddle. And in fact, most of the time, depending on, you know, the nature of the series, like if it's like a weekly series, you're not going to get super detailed backgrounds. And a lot of times panels will be empty and it'll just focus on the characters, or have like, you know, weird texturing or filler, something to make the background just not plain white, but not exactly a background. So a lot of times the focus is on the characters. And in this manga, it feels the complete opposite. And I think that's like his style. I'm assuming, and not having read his other stuff, it seems like he really likes to put emphasis on the, just like these massive, backgrounds. And that translates into the action as well, because when you see, like, you'll see a lot of close-up, like, just people getting dismembered, or aliens, or whatever, getting dismembered. I call them aliens, but I don't know where this is situated, so, like, just, like, these creatures, or humanoid people getting just wrecked, like, sliced in half and stuff. But there's also a lot of, environmental destruction, and that's usually caused through, like, you know, caused by firefights, or just giant creatures just landing on stuff and destroying it. Just like these ridiculously overpowered like sci-fi guns, just blowing like huge craters into the side of walls or whatever. And you just look like at the debris that ensues from like these firefights, and you just see like the pieces of architecture just crumble and fall through the air. And it really makes you wonder how long it took to draw. It's like really visually, like, it's just stunning. And like the explosions, I feel like, you know, are just like so insane. It's like almost over the top. Like I don't know if there's a chapter that goes by without something exploding. It's like Michael Bay drew this manga, or like directed this manga. It's like, I think he would be proud if he was reading this. Nihei definitely has his own style. I think while I really, really love the environments, I think like his, at least the human creatures or human looking people, I think his facial expressions could use a little bit of work. The human characters look kind of stiff, not gonna lie, but like the cyborgs and like the weird space creatures are like super inventive. If you're looking for like aesthetically like pleasing like anime designs, you're not gonna get that here. And I feel like that's the type of aesthetic most anime fans or like manga fans, they just shy away from. Something that doesn't, like, if it doesn't look like to a certain standard, a lot of people are just like don't want to be involved in it. And I understand, because it's like anime is like a lot of time the aesthetic of anime is what draws people towards it. So if something just looks like what they would define as like ugly or just not a typical style, then they're gonna shy away from it. And I think that's why Nihei has a cult following, because most anime fans are gonna look at this and just be like, oh, you know, that's ugly. Like I mentioned before in some other episodes where, like, I had a cousin that doesn't like Dragon Ball because she just doesn't like the aesthetic. She does not like how the characters look. To her, they look ugly. And like to some people, most people, that'd be like blasphemy, but it's true. Like, and like, there's a series, Mob Psycho 100. The original art for that series isn't great. But the storytelling really carries it. And then the anime adaptation is just so superior in every way. It's just like, the animation is like stunning. And the performances are just, it's awesome. And so that kind of elevates it. But like most people, even though the anime is like one of the most highest rated anime from this past season, It's not going to be as popular as other work because it's just not as visually or aesthetically pleasing. The character design is just not there. So some people just stay away from it because they think it's ugly. So I get that a lot from reading this. I can tell this is going to be, I can understand why it's not like this massively popular work because it's just not something people typically gravitate towards when they're looking for manga and stuff like that. So I kind of went on a little bit of a spiel there, but I felt like it was necessary. If you're that type of person, I'm not like judging you or anything. I'm just saying that you might not enjoy this. But I think you should give it a go if you're interested in like just like world, like crazy, like unique world building. The story, like when beat by beat, it's not like impressive, like because you're not quite sure what exactly is going on most of the time. And you really get drip fed information. Hey, really, like it seems like he's just drip feeding me stuff. And I didn't even get a full grasp of what was going on in the story until like the end of the first omnibus. And even then, I still left with a lot of questions. But I personally like that. But I know that some people, they might interpret that, well, this is just really slow and I have no idea what's going on and there's no sense of like progression. And I can understand that. But for me, I personally enjoy that. So if you feel like you line more up with that, then you might, and you, I think you can give this a shot and be pretty satisfied with it. But yeah, so I don't think it's the most accessible series. And like, even if you're paying very close attention to the details and the dialogue, you still don't feel like you have a grasp until you get a little later on in the story, I think. But yeah, and like I said, I said this before, but I love worlds like this. I love worlds that are just filled with mystery and you really have to do some like internet digging and like have discussions with other people that have read or watched the adaptation to really, piece together, like the information and figure out what exactly is going on. I love stuff like that. That was a bit of a long, tangent I went on, but I think it's all related. So yeah, that was literally the only criticism I don't particularly care for his character designs, like for the human characters, but like when it comes to like the other like hybrid creatures that he creates, it's some of it is like just flat out horrifying. Like some of the images are still stuck in my head, and others just like really like just like weird. And the creatures, they also scale, you know, they also scale, like you'll have these huge environments, but you also have these ginormous like freaking monsters. And a lot of time, you know, Kiri, I forgot to mention, he has like this gun and it looks like a tiny little gun, but it's like ridiculously overpowered. And he shoots like with pinpoint accuracy, he'll shoot a bullet. And then as soon on impact, it just freaking creates this massive explosion. It'll just tear through things. And then when it tears through them, behind that creature that he just shot, you just see like a freaking entire wall just blow up. It's pretty crazy. But yeah, I talked a lot about the background, the art, and you know, I gave you the basic premise for the story. I could have read more of the story just to kind of give you guys a little more details, but I feel like since there's not, it doesn't feel like there's much like explicitly there in the text. I feel like, you know, if I gave you guys too much information, then, you know, you need something to look forward to. So I don't want to I didn't want to give you like everything. And plus I'm not all the way through the series myself. So, but yes, I mentioned earlier that I do have some community interaction. I'm so excited. I was really happy to see this. So thank you guys for the people that reached out. So the first is Koi Boy B-Boy, and he says, Blame is a great series. It's my go-to example of something that has a story I don't care about much, but I'm always along for the ride because of how cool the art is. I love this early Nihei artwork that is heavy on shading and detail. And honestly, I didn't really think about that. Like, for the most part, I do read manga because I love the stories that the artists tell. It's a different perspective, different culture, different, you know, and you get a lot of really interesting stuff. And I didn't think about that. I guess if you're not there for the story, I could totally see you just enjoying this for the spectacle. So if you really want to see what kind of like stuff Nihei throws at you from chapter to chapter, because you're just interested in like the designs of the monsters or just like, you know, where this character is going to go in this world, what exactly is going on, then yeah, I think you could enjoy this just for the spectacle. I didn't even think about that. So if you're really focused on art and you like different, if you like different like artistic like techniques or different like a different perspective that doesn't look exactly look like everything else that's out there on the market, then I think you'll really enjoy Blam. So thank you, Koi YB. I said I would reply on the podcast. I could have replied through you to Twitter, but I wanted to share this on the podcast because it's pretty exciting. So thanks again. And then the next we have is from Dakuzu, who is the host of the Manga Machinations podcast. He's actually the one that recommended this series for this episode. So thank you, Dakuzu. And he's got actually some more extensive thoughts on the show. So I'm going to read them all for you guys because I think he's made some interesting points here. So he said, my thoughts on Blam. I believe Blam is the ultimate experience of show don't tell. There is minimal exposition throughout the series. Sometimes a chapter won't even have a single word of dialogue. This manga does almost everything through the visual medium of its art. Because of this, some mysteries about the story and world are never fully explained, but I actually really like keeping things vague so that the reader can theorize for themselves. I agree. Tsutomu Nihei was an architect before becoming a manga artist, and it shows. His structural designs are so creative, and his sense of scale is crazy. You'll get an up-close panel of Kiri shooting his gravitational beam emitter, so that's what that gun's called. And the next panel will be miles away, showing the blast blowing holes through three buildings. Nihei's debut is fantastic. Unfortunately, he would go on to create other manga that would essentially be copies of Blam until he started Knights of Sidonia, which is his take on space mechs. Wow, so awesome thoughts. Thank you, Dakuzu. Just a little bit of, a reply towards that. So the show don't tell, I definitely noticed that. I was kind of shocked how quickly I was going through the chapters because I'm like a really slow reader. And I think he really wants the reader to like take in the backgrounds because, again, the backgrounds seem like more of a character to his story. And I think he really wants you to, he really wants to immerse you into the world. So whereas other manga, it feels like an afterthought. And I also agree with the point about leaving room for the fans to theorize. I love stuff like that. It really gets discussion moving. And I just love like the discussion around stuff like this. I remember, what was the last time I had like a huge discussion was on the series Devilman Crybaby. People were talking about that for like weeks after, or maybe even months after it aired on Netflix. And I just love stuff like that. I love stuff that has kind of a, stories that have more of a shelf life, I guess, because sometimes like you go through series and then you talk about it for like a week after it aired and then everybody forgets about it and moves on to the next thing. And I love it when manga like this, that have those cult followings, people are really passionate and they want to discuss it. And, I really enjoyed that. That was a great point. And then the architect thing I did not know about. So that definitely shows, like you said, I'm always amazed when like a mangaka takes like a different profession that maybe they were involved in at some point or studied, and then they use it in their manga to kind of inform the plot or like the art. And I've seen this when it comes to like cooking manga, or like even I think Cells at Work, I believe like that was like researched to death. I don't know if the mangaka was a doctor at some point, but I always love it when mangaka, because they're already super talented as it is, like just to be a mangaka, like if you're not doing a collaboration, just you have to be a good storyteller, a good artist, a good like director, I guess, like because you're doing like essentially what is like camera like shots, scene to scene, and you really have to have a lot of different talents to be a successful mangaka, create a successful story. And yeah, and when like somebody like Nihei, who was an architect, and then uses that for his manga, I think that's really, really cool. And like you said, it definitely shows. The beam emitter is really cool. I like the detail about the, you know, how you'll go through a person, and then the next panel, like behind that person, you just see like freaking just holes, like a giant crater through the side of like these buildings or these walls, these structures. And I did talk about that a little bit before, like when like the structures like crumble and fall and collapse on top of each other. It's just like, it's awesome. It's like a huge spectacle. So I think that was it for the thoughts. Thank you guys so much. That always, like, stuff like this makes the podcast better, makes it more enjoyable to read, and it gets a little bit of discussion flowing, which is what I really like, which is what I really, really want, actually. Thank you guys again. I think that's going to call for this episode. I'm really enjoying Blam. I hope you guys do check it out. It's a little on the pricey end. You might want to wait for a sale like I did. They're collected into Omnibuy, so there's six of them, but they're like $20 a piece, at least in English. So pretty pricey, but I think it's definitely worth it if this is sounds like it's up your alley. So the next series, this is a recommendation actually from at Hengoroni on Twitter. He originally recommended Naoki Urasawa's Monster, which I really want to read. Unfortunately, there's no digital version available for that. And that's a massive series, so like a series like that, I would definitely want to buy digital. And again, this is more, you know, about accessibility. So I want to make sure that people, if they have a specific preference, if they strictly read things digital, I want them to be able to have that option. Maybe later on down the line, Urasawa kind of opens up to digital format, because I think none of his works are available digitally, which sucks. Then I might cover Monster, but who knows? We'll see. I'll find some different format to talk about. I don't know. So instead, he ended up recommending Toriko, which is a manga. I think it's a Shonen Jump manga, and that is written and illustrated by, oh, this is kind of a mouthful, Mitsutoshi Shimabukuro. So that was recommended by Hengoroni on Twitter. Thank you for the recommendation. And again, if you guys have recommendations, I will prioritize those. I mean, I have a list of series that I plan to visit in the future for the podcast, but I don't mind pushing those aside. I really don't have an agenda. I just like to decide on stuff week to week. So, Toriko will be next week. Oh, and another thing, he did ask me about my favorite series, and I guess if any of you other guys are curious about this, I did respond to him on Twitter, but I basically told him, like, for my favorites, they fluctuate a lot. It just really depends on what I'm reading at the time and how it's making me feel. Sometimes it's like, well, I'm reading this right now, and it feels like it's one of my favorites right now. So, for a series that I've finished, I read a lot of Inio Asano work, and one of the mainstays on my list of favorites is Solanin. And I just love his work in general, but Solanin is definitely one of my favorites. And Goodnight Poon Poon is another one that's right up there next to it. I just love that mangaka, period. But those are his standout works to me. So, yeah, if you guys... I might cover those on the podcast sometime in the future. So, if you guys were curious, those are my favorites. And I really have a massive list. Like, a lot of the stuff I've covered for this podcast are slowly becoming my favorites. I got to read more of it, you know, to make, like, a definitive, like, to be able to say, yeah, this is definitely one of my favorites. But, like, I've read a lot of stuff that I've enjoyed on this podcast. So, I think this is definitely going a little longer. So I want to thank you guys for your patience. Thanks again for reaching out. I had three different people reach out, one with recommendation, two with impressions. So that's really cool. I love stuff like that. And I can't wait to see more of that. So, that'll call it for this episode. I'll catch you guys next week with the episode on Toriko, which, by the way, is available on the Shonen Jump app. If you are a subscriber, $2 a month, you get the whole backlog of it. Check that out beforehand. If you want to add any of your own impressions, I will definitely add that to the show. Thanks again, and catch you next week.